Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1954 that Elvis Presley signed his first recording contract and quit his job as what? Was it A, church organist? Was it B, a truck driver? Was it C, a postman? Or was it D, a high school custodian? Elvis's job before signing his first recording contract. What was his previous job, anyway? And question number two, it was 107 years ago today, you may remember. 1918, that famous opera tenor Enrico Caruso recorded a song that became popular in the military and with the U.S. public during World War I. What was that song's title? Was it A, A Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight? Was it B, When Johnny Comes Marching Home? Was it C, We'll Meet Again? Or was it D, Over There? Enrico's recording of a popular war song? Which one was it, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the 11th of July. Well, it was 86 years ago today, 1939, that Frank Sinatra made his recording debut with the Harry James Band with the songs Melancholy Mood and From the Bottom of My Heart. Sinatra's recording debut today in 1939. And it was on this very day, back in 1969, that the Rolling Stones released the single Honky Tonk Women in the U.S. Today, back in 69, Honky Tonk Women. And in classical music news, we have this article titled, Feel the Rhythm, Toe-Tapping Pieces That Will Make You Want to Dance. This is published in BBC Music Magazine on the 29th of March, 2025. The recommendations include Florence Price, Symphony No. 3. Despite being composed during the Great Depression, this piece by Florence Price is full of life and energy. The third movement is a juba, a dance that was popular among enslaved people, forced to work on plantations, and involved a lot of clapping and stamping. Price takes an African-American melody and sets it in a very rhythmical way. The result is quite different from the music of other composers of that period. And then there's John Adams' Short Ride in a Fast Machine. This is a lot easier than some of John Adams' other works. But it takes endurance. You start at a very fast pace that never lets up. Adams wrote it to evoke the feeling of being in a fast car at night. It's short and sharp. The whole thing is over in less than 5 minutes, but it grabs you and takes you with it. It's so exciting. And then there's Bela Bartok, Sonata for Two Pianos and Percussion. For Bartok, the freedom to use rhythm without restrictions was an absolute priority. And that is particularly apparent in the slow movement of this 1937 piece, which epitomizes his night music style. Here he uses rhythm in all sorts of original ways to imitate the sounds of the outdoors at nighttime and the animals that you would typically hear in the darkness. The result is a piece full of exciting and unusual colors that evokes the feeling of walking through a forest in the dark. And these are just three of the seven total that were included in the original article. Thelonious Monk introduces our jazz, classical, and Broadway music news. It's titled, The Infinite Variety of Music by Leonard Bernstein. That's his book, and it's being reviewed here by Matt Young in Quarter Notes, the WCPE member magazine, March, April, May, 2025. Nothing in the world opens the subject up quite like an excellent teacher. And in the infinite variety of music, readers gain access to one of the greatest musical educators of all time, Leonard Bernstein. A towering figure in American music, Bernstein was not only a prolific composer and conductor, but also a passionate teacher who dedicated himself to making classical music accessible to all. This book is a treasure trove of his wisdom, featuring a variety of materials, from lecture scripts and guided analyses to essays and a classical style dialogue. What makes it even more remarkable is the multimedia experience it offers. For every script in the book, there is a corresponding, freely available video where Bernstein brings the music to life with his voice, his piano, and his orchestra. Together, these recordings make The Infinite Variety of Music an indispensable guide for anyone eager to deepen their understanding of classical music. I have many times been frustrated with the difficulty of studying music. One can read music with the best of them and still be stymied by the fact that notes on a stave are fundamentally different from those same notes played by an orchestra. This gets to the very foundation of a musical education. How can one learn the advantage of a particular note or rhythm if they're not being played for them? That is precisely the advantage of this book. Here you have the words themselves alongside the black and white staves, which make up the visual component of music, but read in conjunction with the original telecast, all of which are available for free on YouTube, the words and the notes come to life. Reading through The Infinite Variety of Music, I was struck by what a deep gift it is to give someone a musical education they previously lacked the words to describe. This gift is certainly true of the early chapters, where Mr. Bernstein discusses the impact of jazz and the inheritance of Mozart, but is more keenly felt in the analyses that populate the end of the book. With these texts, along with their accompanying audio, we are truly given a gem from posterity. having read along with Mr. Bernstein as he examines Beethoven's Symphony No. 3 in F flat major, I now feel that I understand that symphony infinitely better and at a level of depth fundamentally inaccessible to me beforehand. And to understand something, even to have the keys to understanding something, is to forever possess it. So what a gift, then. There are not trifling things. Beethoven's third, Tchaikovsky's sixth, Brahms' fourth, these are enduring triumphs of the age of classical music, and it is only now, after being introduced to them through the eyes and ears of Mr. Bernstein, that I finally feel that I am sort of some part, possess them in an intimate way that comes with glimpsing the very, very monumental care of a thing. This is the core. And in Music Research and Technology, we have this article titled, "This Cat Was Born to Play the Piano." You've seen videos of cats, quote-unquote, playing the piano before, but we'll bet you haven't seen one quite like Nora. This is published in BBC Music Magazine, July the 6th, 2025, Steve Wright. Prepare to behold a feline maestro exploring some truly avant-garde piano textures. Okay, you've probably seen your fair share of cats playing the piano, and by quote-unquote playing, we mean casually meandering across the keys like they're on a leisurely catwalk, vaguely puzzled by the peculiar sounds they're unleashing. But Nora? Nora is no ordinary keyboard cruiser. She's not here for casual noodling. She takes her seat, yes, properly, at the piano stool and proceeds to perform with remarkable technique. First comes the right paw, then the left paw, and then, in a flourish worthy of a conservatoire grad, both paws in perfect synchrony. We like the way Nora pauses ever so often and directs an expectant gaze at the camera for the appropriate audience applause. A little later, she's able to turn her skills to a duet performance with a second off-camera pianist. The key of C seems to hold a particular fascination for Nora. Perfect harmonies. Cats in classical music make quite good bedfellows, in fact. Our editor, Charlotte Smith, was lucky enough to catch on film the moment a cat wandered on stage at a Beethoven concert last year. And several composers have been noted cat lovers. These include the great American composer Aaron Copland, who was famously fond of cats. He shared his home with several feline companions throughout his life and often mentioned their calming presence. Photographs show him relaxing with cats on his lap, suggesting they were cherished muses during his quieter, more reflective composing moments. Other feline enthusiasts include French composer Maurice Ravel. The creator of Bolero was the proud owner of several Siamese cats. He adored them so much that he would talk to them in a special, affectionate way. Some have even suggested that Ravel's love for cats influenced the delicate textures in his music. Speaking of Ravel, French author Colette, who wrote a libretto for Ravel, was another cat lover. About cat-loving composers, well, elsewhere, Igor Stravinsky had a soft spot for cats, and felines frequently appear in photographs with that composer. The eccentric Erik Satie was fond of various forms of animals, including cats. Alban Berg was another cat enthusiast. And his letters occasionally mention his affection for them. Gioacchino Rossini was a cat lover and even sort of wrote music for them. His comic duet for two cats is likely a playful mashup of his own melodies, but it's delightfully bizarre enough to earn a spot among classical music's quirkiest pieces. And Claude Debussy adored his cat Manu, who had a well-known affection for animals. His music, with its subtle textures and graceful lines, often feels as sleek and mysterious as a cat itself. Need more cats and pianos? Well, be our guest and buy for meow. A video titled Cats vs. Pianos, a compilation, is shown beneath that last line above in the article. Haim introduces our rock and pop music news with Running If You Call My Name, a review of Haim's latest album called I Quit. It's given 3 out of 5 stars in the June 22, 2025 issue of The Week magazine. Haim, LA's three sister rock trio, has always made music that pairs best with an iced beverage and a lawn chair, said Angie Marocchio in Rolling Stone. On their fourth album, they don't just perfect that summer vibe, they dial up the heat and bask in it. All three were single when recording the album, and the result is another dose of sleek, soft pop rock. That's also a cohesive concept record, one focused on breakups and the hard-won independence you earn from them. It's perhaps too on the nose that George Michael's Freedom 90 is sampled on the opening track, said Rachel Aroesti in The Guardian. Much of the album floats on the bitter end of a flawed relationship, evolving the breakup of lead vocalist Danielle Haim and the producer of the band's first three albums. At first, the Michaels sample doesn't quite fit the tune, but then a guitar solo kicks in, and this Frankenstein's monster of a song turns brilliant. Some of the remaining tracks are instantly forgettable, but the sisters have packed in a few other gems, including Relationships, an absurdly delightful single and the best pop song they've ever made. The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's song called Raleigh Durham Reel introduces our local music news. It's titled 10 Songs That Say Something About North Carolina. This is written by Allison Hussey, NPR.org, September 18, 2019. North Carolina may not take up that much space on a map, but it's home to an abundance of musical worlds. North Carolina Public Radio has spent the past year talking to artists about their favorite songs that say something special about our home state. Here are 10 songs that embody just a few of our state's treasures. Elizabeth Cotton's Freight Train, the rumble of locomotives through the sleepy mill town of Carrboro, inspired Elizabeth Cotton to write her signature song. Petey Pablo, Raise Up. With Raise Up, the rapper gave North Carolina a prideful, hard-hitting anthem that became a bona fide radio smash. Earl Scruggs' Foggy Mountain Breakdown. This song transcends the field of niche North Carolina into icon territory. Earl Scruggs, a pillar of bluegrass with his three-finger banjo picking. G. Yamazawa, North Cack. Durham rapper's high-energy spiritual successor to Pablo. Doc and Merle Watson's Southbound. Doc Watson is another titan of the old North State, recognized for his intricate and melodic flat picking on the acoustic guitar, skills he developed after losing his eyesight due to a childhood illness. Etta Baker and John D. Coleman, Crow Jane, a Piedmont blues dream team with close connections to Durham's once booming tobacco industry. Carolina Chocolate Drops, Cornbread and Butter Beans. Joe Thompson provided deep lessons in the history of black string bands in the South. Rihanna Giddens and her bandmates' rendition is more than just an ode to two staple Southern sides. It's an entree into another realm of traditional music history. Chatham County Line, Crop Comes In. Assembled in Raleigh, Chatham County Line established itself as a bridge to bluegrass. This song is a bittersweet but gorgeous example of the state's contemporary batch of excellence roots musicians. Des Arc, Carolina Girls. The main mood of Carolina Girls isn't nostalgia, but a more in-the-moment realization of being ready to return to a familiar, comfortable place. And James Taylor, Carolina in My Mind. What, you thought we forgot? Recorded in England with Paul McCartney and George Harrison singing backup, Taylor's 1968 classic has long been a heartfelt favorite for North Carolinians from Asheville to Avon. So, how'd you do on the trivia questions today? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day, back in 1954, that Elvis Presley signed his first recording contract and quit his job as what? Was that A, a church organist, B, a truck driver, C, a postman, or D, a high school custodian? And the correct answer is answer B. He drove trucks for Crown Electric Company prior to signing his first recording contract. He began working at Crown Electric on April 20th, 1954, earning a dollar an hour, delivering supplies to job sites, and also studying to become an electrician. He worked at Crown Electric until mid-October 1954, but it was on this very day back in 54 that he signed his recording contract with Sun Records. As noted in sunrecords.com, Sun released That's All Right, backed with Blue Moon of Kentucky on July 19, 1954. The songs combined elements of country and blues, the basic ingredients of early rock and roll. That's All Right became a local hit in Arkansas, Mississippi, and New Orleans. Presley's meteoric rise to superstardom was about to begin. And the answer to our second question, it was 107 years ago today, 1918, that famous opera tenor Enrico Caruso recorded a song that became popular in the military and with the U.S. public during World War I. What was that song's title? Was it A, A Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight? Well, not quite. This song was a favorite of the American military at the end of the 19th century, during the Spanish-American War, and around the start of the 20th century, during the Boxer Rebellion. The tune became popular in the military after it was used as a theme by Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders. One history of the song reports, while on tour with the McIntyre and Heath Minstrels, their train arrived at a place called Old Town. From their train window, Metz could see a group of children starting a fire near the tracks, and one of the other minstrels remarked that there'll be a hot time in Old Town tonight. Metz noted the remark on a scrap of paper, intending to write a march with that motif. He did indeed write the march the very next day. It was then used by the McIntyre and Heath Minstrels in their street parades. Well, how about answer B then? When Johnny Comes Marching Home? No, that was a Civil War song composed in 1863 and dedicated to the Army and Navy of the Union by Patrick S. Gilmore, a bandmaster for the U.S. Army. The piece was well known, by the way, on both sides of the conflict. Okay, then what about answer C? We'll meet again. Well, this was a 1939 World War II song made famous by English singer Vera Lynn. The song is one of the most famous of the Second World War era, resonating with servicemen going off to fight, as well as their families and loved ones. Well, that leaves us then with answer D, over there. Yes, answer D is the correct answer here. Caruso recorded this song today back in 1918, and it became popular during World War I. The song's writer, George Cohen, received a Congressional Gold Medal from President Roosevelt in 1936 for this and other contributions to American popular music by him. The song was revised during World War II and featured in several films of the era, including 1942's Yankee Doodle Dandy. So let's close out the program on an upbeat note. The Rolling Stones' Honky Tonk Women, which was released in the U.S. Today back in 1969. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information, or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.